Hey friends, before we get to the episode, I wanted to remind you that the best way to support this show is over at patreon.com/betterideas. That is a platform that allows me to accept donations and allows you to contribute to this show monetarily. So I have to say thank you to all of the people who are already supporting. Thanks for covering the Libsyn bill and making this podcast free for me to do. And thank you for those of you who are listening on a weekly basis. And the only thing that I ask is that you at least go check out that website if this podcast is bringing you some sort of value on a weekly basis. So thanks again, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. My guest in today's podcast is by far one of my favorite human beings to talk to. His name is Matt Turner, and he is a spiritual healer or a channeler, a guru, a therapist, whatever you want to call it. He just helps people, and he's such a phenomenal person to talk to because he's a never-ending river of insights and knowledge about so many of the things that I'm personally interested in. So in this conversation, we talk about, just to give you a little bit of a preview, we talk about transforming fear through love. We talk about energy work. He explains a little bit about what alchemy is, which is cool because I was a little confused about that. We talk about the afterlife. We talk about unworthiness, self-limiting beliefs, and even the Lion King. So, you know, it's just a packed, beautiful, valuable conversation, in my opinion. It brought a lot of value to my life, so I really hope that in turn it does something for you. The weekend after we did this conversation, Matt invited me to one of his workshops, which is another thing that he does. He does a lot of workshops and retreats and essentially like classes on this type of metaphysical stuff. And I got so much more out of that 2 days than I could have imagined, honestly. Before this workshop, I had never been to a workshop because I kind of thought that was something that rich people did as a leisure, like you can afford to go take a weekend off and work on yourself and all of that. But now I totally see its worth and why it is actually an investment in yourself. And it's something that I would encourage everyone at least try. So if that's something you're interested in, then he has a website called belovehealings.com. And I'd highly recommend that if you need any help, which I'm sure we all do, we're all suffering or being challenged in some way, then he's such a great resource, especially for the people that may not have a foundational belief system. They may not be embedded into a certain organized religion or philosophy. Matt just speaks the language of love, which is pretty versatile, if you haven't noticed. And it's super helpful for anyone looking for insight or guidance or to be taught about themselves and who they truly are. So without any further ado, this is a conversation with my friend Matt Turner from BeLoveHealings.com. Just recorded a meditation. I want to get that on the record because I'm pretty excited about that. We want to do more stuff like that, or at least I do. I would love to do that.
Yeah, we're gonna do that.
And I was saying how I don't have really like a practice for stuff like that, like a set practice, but I have a lot of things where I feel like I incorporate mindfulness and what I feel like meditation is to me from my understanding into things like longboarding, doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. But that phrase, do the dishes to do the dishes or to wash the dishes, that's been applying for me at work, like clean the car to clean the car because I detail. Right. And so that's, I feel like what makes it enjoyable because then I can look at it as more of an art form and just be present in it. I also listen to podcasts and I find ways to be entertained, but
sure.
I feel like I use it more as an opportunity to learn and be present in that moment.
Right.
And I was talking about the through line where that's just what I've been referring to whenever I see these like patterns or things that seem true to me, like that remind me of the things that I've learned in the past that make me want to grow and make me want to be better. Growing up fundamentally in one ideology and stepping away from it, I started to recognize all of these different like patterns and through lines by studying different paths broadly. And then whenever I was introduced to meditation and like a lot of your ideas and people like you who have spoken, I think, a lot of the same truths that I've learned throughout my life, but in a completely different language, then when I go back to a lot of like what we would call the sacred texts of like scriptures and different religions, I see a lot of the same things that like stick out at me. And it's like, oh, that I think was the intention of what this messiah figure was trying to tell us when they talk about being present or bearing your cross or facing the world or being the change you want to see or being love or whatever that idea even means, because it's almost like layered. But I don't know. I just think it's pretty cool that there's like, there seems to be a pattern to things, and meditation is one of those things that I feel like broadly covers those truths because it's a practice of being in the moment, which is just, it's been really helpful.
I think it's so important, like with meditation or even with all the other things, to just simplify them, because the reality is at their core, especially the aspect that's the same through all of those things, it typically is just something very simple. But so often through so many of our filters and the way we perceive them in our own brains, we make them so much more complex, which I feel like we then start to kind of lose the actual meaning when we add so much to it, or when we maybe try to get our own interpretation. But then we are also always having our own interpretation. So, you know, I think that for myself, I always just try my best to just focus on what is the simplest version of this. Because for me, that's my way of trying to figure out, okay, what is the core of it? Because I feel like nothing is really meant to be so hard and difficult to understand. Everything is really meant to be simple and easy to understand so that it's more accessible for us. But it's not always expressed and portrayed that way or given that way from other people. Which sometimes is maybe intentionally to be used as a mechanism of confusion. You know, if you think about ideologies and systems that are used to have control over other people, and sometimes the people that are interpreting whatever they're bringing in and then making their own version, I feel like sometimes we'll create it so complex intentionally to create that confusion, because it's easier to control those people into their dogma. And so, you know, for me, that's why just keeping it simple is a way to even not be as susceptible to that.
What do you think it is that like causes us to do that? I mean, I guess the negative aspect of it, because like you're saying, it really is so simple. Like these ideas, and I've even noticed that usually the cliches are the truth, you know, like, what's that Beatles song? All You Need Is Love. Like, it's the most cliche thing, but it really is true. And I feel like I recognize that with a lot of things, but we have the tendency to like deny the things that I think that we know, like inherently. Why do you think that is?
I mean, honestly, like, I feel like so much of it boils down to unworthiness, because like, go with all you need is love example. Right. So if someone hears that, think of like, you know, of course there are people that can believe that, and so there may be potentially the people who feel more worthy of that. But think about the people who get cynical of it, or the people who maybe want to poke fun, or the people who just flat out like, no, that's not enough. You have to blah, 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 whatever it is. You know, I feel like their unworthiness creates like maybe like those mechanisms or behaviors as a way to keep them disconnected from that as a potential reality for themselves of love.
But it seems to me like it's just the belief that they're unworthy.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone's actually unworthy.
Exactly.
They believe that. And then that becomes like a way that you judge yourself, therefore others. I've been really obsessed with this verse lately, because I think Palmer recognized it when we were podcasting one time, that he's like, oh wait, that's I think how you're supposed to see it. Mm-hmm. It's judge not lest ye be judged. Mm-hmm. That sounds like, from my, like the way that I grew up, it seemed like it meant if you judge people, God will judge you.
Yeah. That's about self-judgment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's more about self-judgment because it's saying when you're judging others, that is how you are being judged by yourself.
Exactly.
And it's like, I think that that is really the only limiting belief is that that judge means anything. Mm-hmm. Because when you're judging others, you are just judging yourself. Or even when you are just blatantly mm-hmm. judging yourself, because a lot of people, I feel like, struggle with that. I think everyone does. Mm-hmm. It's a statement, I think, saying not to do that. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't judge yourself.
Yeah.
Because that becomes the way that you judge mm-hmm. others.
You know, I feel like we have, with any thought we have, judgments included, that we have the choice each time to decide whether we want to take that on as a reality. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I always tell my clients, because I feel like a lot of people feel like their brain is crazy because of all maybe the perceived crazy thoughts that they have. Mm. And people don't realize how normal that is and that pretty much everyone's brain does that.
Yeah.
And I didn't used to realize that until, you know, just working with clients over the years, and I've been able to see just like those commonalities.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I always like to remind them of is like, just because you have the thought doesn't mean it has to be defined in any way as your character.
Yeah.
You know, meaning that when you have that thought or that judgment, you have the ability to say, no, that's not who I'm committed to being. Like, that's what I do. If I have like some kind of weird, crazy thoughts, feels like it falls on out of nowhere, or like a judgment, especially when I'm being aware or present, I'll remember just to say, nope, that's not who I'm committed to being.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it shows up and then I tell it, no, you know, like I don't choose it. So I feel like that's just really kind of like a way of literally like transforming it in the moment. It's like alchemy, mm-hmm. you know, it's like using that love, which is standing in my power and my knowing that I'm worthy, to transform the fear, maybe like that judgment thought that comes from that belief that I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
And that really helps.
Yeah. Is that what alchemy is?
From your understanding? As with everything, I like to simplify it. So alchemy is just transforming one vibration to another. You know, oftentimes it's talked about as like with metals and things like that, but it still exists in energy. You know, so just transforming one thing from another. So I often like to think of healing as alchemy in terms of using love to transform fear.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of different versions of fear, which is our judgments, our limiting beliefs, our angers, our sadness, our guilt, our shame, like all our pain, all of that. And then all the expressions of love are more of those empowering beliefs or those affirmative things, or like the joy and the peace and the happiness and the beauty and all of that. Because fear is just a resistance to love. It doesn't mean love isn't there. It just means you're resisting receiving it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, like that's how I like to think of alchemy. And then it can be expressed in so many different ways.
Yeah. That reminds me so much of this book that I read recently called High Magic.
Okay.
It's about like the spiritual practice of magic, but the author says pretty much the same thing, that magic is the process of transforming energy. Mm-hmm. And so it's more of a spiritual thing than, you know, like a magician, like the parlor trick kind of idea that you see when you think of magic. And I think that it's also kind of underneath a lot of the spiritual traditions that we don't consider magic. I think there's actually a lot of mystical meaning underneath a lot of the stuff that I've learned and read. And it just makes me think of how light casts a shadow, right? So if there is light, then there is inherently dark. And I think that's like what you said, that I think is represented in what you said about like fear and love. Like fear is just the resistance to love. But I even am getting to a place now where I think that is necessary. Like we were talking about before we recorded, because it becomes your like superpower. But if you have a shadow, all that means is that there is light. Mm-hmm. So it's like you said, there, when fear is present, it doesn't mean that love isn't there still. It just means that there's a resistance to it. But I think even that's necessary to a certain extent.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, for now.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I believe there may come a time just in the evolution of consciousness where that isn't maybe necessary anymore. Mm. Especially as we all get back to that I am fully worthy and we can stand in that knowing. Yeah. Because then we can just come back to just pure love. You know, back to just that God energy where we come from. Except we don't come back as more that, like, okay, like there is this book called Spiritual Anatomy that I have that book, but it's a class I took when I went to Delphi. Mm. And so the man who created the class, like, wrote the book also. And it uses the 7 days of creation in the Bible and uses that as a metaphor to talk about the seven creational day cycle of the evolution of consciousness, which spans over billions of years.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe I've never told you about this
one. No, I actually, I feel like I already grasp it because
yeah.
That's what I mean. That's the magic of even something like the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Like just the whole garden story is so, I think, symbolic of the evolution of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like not only over thousands of years, but also in our life. I think we all go through those phases.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the things that it talks about is like in day one, where we're kind of separating from God, is that we're still kind of like children of God.
Yeah.
And so then it goes through the cycles and it talks about it like in day seven, which is the spirit of universal oneness is what day seven is about. And that's like a shorter time period. But basically it talks about that we all come back to God, but as an individual. So now there's all these collective individual thoughts shared within that God energy. And so all of those along with God are now working together to expand consciousness in a whole nother way.
So do you think there does come a time that we get there? Like, because I always see this balance of light and dark, or because there is light, it implies dark. Mm-hmm. Life implies death and vice versa and all that. I always think of it as like the yin and the yang. Like it is a balance, but I think that because it's a balance, it's the thing that moves us forward.
Right.
So I always wonder and like fantasize about a time where we do get to the end, if there is one.
I believe that yes, like that happens, but I don't necessarily perceive the end as just like done and stopping. Mm. I mean, I think that there can be that, but I still think that consciousness still continues to expand in some type of way. Now, maybe it doesn't necessarily look the same as what it does now, but I feel like we don't all get there at the same time because each individual's consciousness is evolving at our own pace or our own rate, depending on who we are, how we're transforming just our shit. You know, are we dealing with our pain or traumas, like our past, like our darkness, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like the more we keep transforming that until there isn't any more there. And then, I mean, at that point, we basically, when we move out of duality, I mean, light and dark only exist because duality does. When we transform beyond that duality, then like there isn't going to be the need for that. And that's why like the yin and the yang exist for right now. Mm. You know, but maybe there are times when those things didn't exist.
Yeah.
And I believe there'll be times when they don't exist again, but maybe for a different reason.
Mm. Do you feel like that is like the idea of heaven, or why we have, like, it seems like every tradition and every person even has like this conceptualization of the end, whatever that means. And it's always kind of tapered to the ideal life or the idea state of being.
Right.
I sometimes just wonder if that is sort of another way of escaping from the reality. Because I guess that's more playing the nihilistic view.
Sure.
But like, if there is an end, then that sort of makes it not infinite in that way.
Right. Well, think of it as like, again, kind of like alchemy. You know, it's not that it ends or stops. It just transforms vibrations, right? Like as we evolve. Mm. So even once we get to that state, we don't stop existing. Like there, you know, isn't like a done, like a finality to it. It just changes form. It's like it just changes outfits, right? Or growing up from from child to adult, for most of us that changes and looks different.
Yeah.
You know, but we still keep existing.
Yeah.
Or we still keep doing something, but maybe we do something different now. Mm-hmm. You know, for one, there's not the same dependency that we might need on other people to take care of us. And we can be more in our own power and then maybe have contribution to be able to bring more creative ideas or thoughts or whatever it is that they are. You know, mm-hmm. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, like even that idea of heaven, again, you know, simplifying it, is it's really at the end of the day just a matter of perception. You know, and I feel like that's why that idea of heaven is so different for so many people, because, you know, for me, when I simplify it and look at the core, it's more just about, you know, what do I imagine is going to give me peace and contentment and happiness. For some people, like, think of it like when we're going on vacation. Some people want to go to the beach. Some people want to go out in the mountains. Mm. You know, some people want to go to the city. Some people want to go out in the country.
Yeah.
We all have different ideas of what gives us that sense of peace, a sense of happiness, a sense of connection. So I feel like everyone's idea of heaven can look so different, because depending on our perception, how we perceive things, it can be a different experience for each of us.
Yeah.
But then when you add on top of that, like romanticizing things, oftentimes when someone shares their idea of heaven, then you get all these other people that romanticize that idea, because maybe there's a part of them that wants that, but maybe don't fully believe or hasn't maybe believed that it's possible for them. So now they want to attach to that idea and figure out, oh, how can I get that?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that was for me. Instead of checking in with themselves to say, what would mine look like?
And so I think the pitfall, at least for me, and the way my interpretation has changed is that I don't think that idea can exist anywhere but this present moment. So like in linear time, I just don't think that it's a place that exists in the future, because that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Like at least as far as I know, it's always been now.
Right.
And so I think the stumbling block that comes with an idea of that is that it sets your awareness to the future and not the present. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that's where we get this like harmful idea of the afterlife. And that's something I've really grappled with for a long time, because I used to believe that like there's this place that you go when you die and it's perfect.
Right.
And although that might be true, I think that it's not really meaningful right now in this moment. In fact, I think it does more harm than good to think in that mindset all the time. It's like, well, none of this really matters because someday I'll be there as long as I'm a good person.
Because it's an escape.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. I think that it's more of an attachment to life than it is an acceptance of death.
Yeah.
Which I actually think is the spiritual route, is accepting the shadow, which ultimately is the fear of death, because that's what I think all of our fears and anxieties like stem from, is that, oh, we're mortal, we're awake, we're alive. Mm-hmm. And that means that it's going to be hard and that it doesn't last forever as far as we know. And so I feel like this attachment to an infinite afterlife for a lot of people becomes more of an attachment to life in a way to avoid like the acceptance of, I think, the gift that is the present moment, because that really is all we have. But to like, I guess, combat what I just said, I do think that that is where eternal life is found,
right?
Is in the acceptance of the yin and the yang. And that can only happen now. Right. It can't happen any other time.
Right.
And so I don't know. That's a thought that I've had.
Yeah. I mean, like, yes to all of that. Because at the end of the day, you know, like, we're like, I feel like it's so much all really a state of mind. And not only like mind in terms of the brain, but I mean in terms of just like consciousness. In that, all of that idea of heaven that people might believe is someday in the future, all of what they can experience there, they can't experience right now. If we make the choice to, we can have all that experience right now.
Yes.
But what gets in the way for most of us is there's some part of us that believes we're not worthy of it right now, because, you know, that's why we often say, well, I can maybe get it in the future when I die, because there's still time for me to change, to become that person that I believe is actually worthy of it.
When the only thing in the way of you becoming that person is that the belief
exactly,
that you're not that person already.
Which is a lie.
Yes.
That belief is a big fat freaking lie.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Yeah. And that really is, to me, that is what the ego is.
Mm-hmm.
Like this idea, which is even in the Bible a lot. People don't talk about, but a lot of the time in the New Testament, when they use the word I, they used ego, which is Greek. Mm-hmm. It's just ego.
Yep.
And so like when I believe it was Paul says, like, I have become dead to the flesh and Christ lives through me.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the idea of killing that voice, that belief that believes that it's unworthy, and allowing the Christ consciousness or the spirit or your true self to come through and live as that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you do kind of, to a certain extent, have to kill those ideas or those beliefs, because they're the ones that hold you back from being or from remembering that you are that already.
You know, and a lot of problems with, you know, because then we could look at, why is it that people just can't do it? Why do people struggle with that? Because so many of us, through our life experiences, pains, wounds, traumas, hurts, heartaches, all of that, have so much evidence that we've gathered throughout all of our life that proves to us that that belief that we're not worthy is true. And so, you know, like you can think, and so you can imagine sometimes when some of those people, when we're talking to them about, like, you've just got to believe you're worthy, why so many people struggle with just believing they're worthy, because in their mind, they have all these reasons like, no, that for sure I'm not, because this happened, this happened, this happened, this person said this, you know? And so I feel like that's why it's so important. I mean, so many ways that we can look at even transforming that stuff, you know, but two of them, one is just forgiveness of being able to deal with our shit and healing and transforming whatever that is. But like we were talking about, you know, earlier today about reconditioning the brain, you know, like choosing new, more empowering thoughts to replace those limiting judgment thoughts, and then choosing to allow our mind to say those repetitively, focusing on that so that we can recondition our brain to these new beliefs.
Yeah.
Because just as I'm choosing to believe that I'm not worthy, I can also choose to believe that I'm worthy. But sometimes it just takes my brain hearing it over and over and over, so that I can maybe collect new evidence that gives me proof that maybe I am worthy, so that eventually that becomes enough, some for some people, like in a quantity type way, to override the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's like just a matter of will. And I think that's such a interesting thing to explore, because like I said earlier when I was talking about that conversation I had with my sister, I'm like, whenever you are having those like doubting thoughts and those beliefs and you're talking to yourself, who's talking to who? Like, there's clearly at least two different parts of you or a person, like mentally or spiritually, whatever you want to call it. Maybe those are two different things. Maybe they're one and the same, but it does seem like it starts with how you interact with that is you and that is not you. Because it seems like everyone has that. And there's part of you that seems to exist in the past and in the future and just all over the place. And I think that's where a lot of like our fears and anxieties come from. I heard a friend on my podcast one time say that anxiety is living in the future and depression is living in the past. And I think that that's true in the sense that there's a part of us that has attachment. And then there's a part of us that is still that child in awe of the world that is fully present and that is like observing all of this. But it's not attached. So it's like a matter of tuning into that and listening to that instead of listening to what is often the loudest thing.
Yeah.
And that's usually fear. And That's hard though. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to do.
Yeah. Sometimes for some people, that's a lot of noise to navigate their way through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why like people like, you know, like myself or other people, even like what you're doing too, do what we do, because we help people figure out how the hell to navigate through the noise and remind them by being a mirror, number one, but also just in literally telling them, you know, and helping them see it. That what's on the other side of all of that noise, there is beauty, you know, there is love, there is self-worth, there is knowing all of that and believing it too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For me, it's, I don't think that I know this, but I just hope to be transparent enough to like actually help people.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like I was saying earlier, like, because I got my, ordainment and all that, like I've always felt like a pastor, but at the same time, I've never felt like I'm someone who knows what people are supposed to know to not feel fear or suffering or sin or whatever that,
which whatever I can tell is. You in a little bit of knowing you, that that's not true. That's a lie you tell yourself because you have a lot of innate wisdom just in the things that you say. And so, you know, talking about limiting beliefs, that's such a perfect example.
It really is.
Right?
Yeah. But I guess the way that I know how to help right now is by being transparent about that, because I do still have those beliefs and I do still like fear and doubt and question myself a lot. And so I feel like for me, the way to heal that and to like hopefully get past that is to just be transparent about it.
Yeah.
Like, this is how I feel.
Well, because number one, people are going to trust you more when you do that. And they're going to be able to feel more comfortable and safer with you when they realize that you still struggle. Mm. You know, that's one of the reasons why I've been on my own healing journey for 17 years and operating and working as a healer, helping other people for almost 10 years now. Mm. And I still have things that I struggle with, and I'm very open about it with my clients. And I will share stories from my past a lot of, you know, when if I'm having a conversation with a client and something that we're talking about relates to something I've experienced in my life and what I learned.
Yeah.
I'll always tell that story, you know, because I think it's important for people to see that, hey, you're not alone. You're not the only one that experiences this. It's very normal and it's okay. And you don't have to necessarily experience it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like that's been the insights that I get from archetypal stories. Like, because I think they're true in that way of like, we live out the same patterns, although the circumstances and the details of your life are completely unique to you. The underlying theme seems to be like what I call the through line.
Yeah.
We all experience it, but in very different ways a lot of the time. And it's like, that's what I get from learning about these types of things, learning from people like you and then a lot, like all kinds of other spiritual teachers, because you see those narratives and those stories play out in like literally every great story. And then it's really cool for me to like think about my life in that way of, I really like the hero's journey. That's the one I'm most obsessed with, because that's what I see as like the Jesus story, the Buddha story, the like even Batman is a good hero's journey. Lion King, just saw the new one. Have you seen that yet?
No, don't say anything.
Yeah, no, I won't give away spoilers.
So it's one of my favorite Disney
movies. Me too.
That's Lion King,
because it's the best hero's journey ever told. And like that's, I feel like I got that from a young age. Like, we're supposed to be Simba in this. Like, and that even explains the Genesis story, like to bring it back to what you brought up about how this is our evolution of our psychology, of our spirit, our mind, whatever you want to call it. Like, we all start out kind of in the garden, you know, like as kids, you haven't developed that ego, that self-judgment, the fear. The kids don't have that, little kids. Mm-hmm. And then as you get older, I feel like, because it's necessary when you grow up to pay attention to people around you, to learn how to be a human, literally, that when you get to a certain age, that is no longer necessary, because you paying attention to how everyone else does things will eventually prohibit you from becoming your own person. And then I feel like that's how we judge ourselves most of the time.
That comparison can be a bit.
Yeah. Which to me, that's like leaving the garden.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it was Eden, but now I'm starting to realize things seem a little corrupt here. They don't make perfect sense.
Here comes and the serpent.
Yeah. The serpent, which to me is consciousness.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you mean you have to navigate leaving the garden like knowingly? I don't think it's more of an accidental thing. Right, it feels like an accident when it's happening, but then I think that's, I guess, the inward journey or the spiritual path is to like consciously be aware of that and then to willingly go out into the chaos and try to provide that balance between the yin and the yang, chaos and order, wrong and right, light and dark, all of that, all of the cliches.
All the dualities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I can't help feeling like part of us never left the garden, because like in Lion King, it always returns, you know? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, you don't get to that point until you become, until you go through the necessary steps, mm-hmm. which is what I love about Lion King is like, it starts out beautiful. Everyone's singing. It's the perfect garden that his father, God, has set out. For him to rule over, and then his father dies, which is kind of like the moment that we wake up and we realize the world's not perfect.
Right.
And then he has to go through phases of essentially full belief in the beginning, and then it's nihilism after that. Mm-hmm. No worries, nothing matters. Mm-hmm. Like Hakuna Matata. Exactly. That to me is like nihilism.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's nothing to, it's all pointless. And then Rafiki comes in and he like hits him over the head and just like reminds him of who he is. No, he is Simba. He is the son of Mufasa. He is the archetype of who he is, but he's also not that.
Yeah.
He's also more than that. And then that's, I think, what gives him the ability to step out into willingly facing evil, which is portrayed as his uncle.
Scar.
And then basically accepting it, overcoming it, and then getting rid of it. And then everything goes back to the garden.
Yeah.
And that's like that is the archetypal story that I feel like we've been told mm-hmm. forever. Like the Buddha was literally the same story. He was supposed to grow up in royalty. Mm-hmm. He escaped, lived in poverty. And then it gets to that turning point when he's under the Bodhi tree for like 40 days or something, which is a very symbolic mm-hmm. number. And then he realizes life is suffering. It's all dukkha. There is no point, but I can't just sit here and do nothing about it.
Yeah.
And so he goes out and starts his ministry. And it's mm-hmm. like, I think that is the phase that we are supposed to try to embody, is like realizing the self and then going out and acting in the world as our true self, not the nihilist or the one that's feared, that fears God. You know, like when Adam hides from walking with God, mm-hmm. because what does walking with God mean? It means to be fully in truth and to be your true self at any given moment. And that's a scary thing, especially if you're judging yourself and you think that you're naked and afraid.
Right.
Then that's going to be a scary thing to do.
Hmm.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. But I'm obsessed with those narratives lately.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful lens, I think, to look through.
For sure.
To like look at like, where am I at right now? Like, I hope I'm Simba.
Mm-hmm.
In this story.
Well, I think it's important to always be looking at, you know, where I'm at right now to mm-hmm. build that conscious awareness, but also to check in,
mm-hmm.
you know, like but I feel like so many people in the world live a lot more unconsciously.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's better, right? But mm-hmm. in turn, I put better in parentheses, but I feel like, 'cause sometimes with that more responsibility, or I'm sorry, with more like conscious awareness, sometimes comes more responsibility. Mm. It's like, oh, now I understand that who I'm being in the world, the impact it's having. Yes. And now I know like how I can transform it. But yeah, you know, like we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And so that's like those blinders sometimes. Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss.
Thank you. I was trying to think of what that damn quote was.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah. And it really is. That's another one of those cliches that's just 100% true in my mind. But
then bliss is also a matter of perception, because are they really actually living in bliss, or do they just think that they are because maybe their level of suffering has been so normalized, you know? But such a perfect example of everything's a matter of perception.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, is it seems like people that live in ignorance they don't know they're in bliss, which is what's bliss about it.
Right.
It's like, I don't know. To me, that really, like,
it's a juicy thing to think about.
Yeah. Because it makes me think that, because I don't believe in the, I guess, modernized traditional afterlife idea.
Yeah.
I tend to think of heaven and hell as states of being now.
I'm right there.
And I think ignorance is more like hell is described in scripture as isolation, complete isolation. And I think it is bliss, because you are the God of that little universe.
Yep.
You know, when you're completely driven by your fears and your ego, you know exactly what to do. And I think that's the scary part about trying to build the kingdom, so to speak, is that you have to be conscious and you have to be awake and you have to endure knowing that. And I think that's the scary part. You know, that's why they say the path is narrow.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's often a lot easier not to.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Because getting to know the light, the good, awesome parts of ourselves, comes with getting to know the shadow part of ourselves too.
Yeah. And I think that God, or whatever that idea is embodies all of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. My understanding is that, like, I really like the spiritual channeler, Paul Selig. And his guides say that all is of or nothing is. And I think that's a really profound way to look at it, because it means that includes the light and the dark.
Yeah.
Or
you just can't be conditional and pick which one makes you feel better.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's conditions. If you say that, oh, well, that's not God, then you're putting conditions on it, and you're putting
which
it in a box.
Which is the opposite of what God is, if God is love.
Yeah, or if God is existence itself, pure being, unconditional divine love, then I think that has to include the all, like everything.
Because God doesn't say, I only love you when you're doing something great.
Yeah.
God loves us no matter what.
Spinoza is another cool philosopher that I like, and he said that if God is infinite, then nothing can be outside of God, because if there's infinity plus one,
logical.
then infinity's right. not infinity if right. there's more than that.
Yeah,
because that's what it means. It's infinite, and so that would mean that it has to include everything that is. And I think it's almost impossible to wrap your head around, but I feel like to embody that is to be the vessel, to be the center point between the yin and the yang, and to move forward consciously.
Right.
Yeah. Which you might call alchemy, to get back to your thing, because you're just transforming. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's all connected. It's all connected.
It really is.
It's crazy. Well, do you want to talk about something? Or is there anything specifically you wanted to mention during the podcast?
No, I feel like we kind of talked about all the things that we discussed earlier.
Yeah, I love it.
I can't think of too many other specific things.
Yeah. Okay, well, I at least for sure want to talk a little bit about what you do. Because I think we've gotten into it a little bit the first time you're on and stuff.
Right.
And I'll post all the links and all that. But I guess I haven't really heard much from you since last time we recorded, so I'm just curious to know like what you've been up to and some of your ideas about where it's going.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I feel like a lot of my healing work is really starting to shift into self-healing, you know, like meaning teaching other people how it is that they themselves can be out in the world as their own healer and be equipped to the being able to walk that path. Essentially, basically, like helping people not have to be dependent on me or other people like me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which, of course, like sometimes for a while looks like having to help them navigate through the noise and the shadow and whatever it is that's there, helping build that conscious awareness, learning forgiveness of self, coming back to love, whatever that is. But then also teaching ways of like how you can be doing this on your own out in the world too.
Go out.
It doesn't only happen when you come here.
Yeah.
You know, if it's only happening when they're coming here and sitting and sharing space with me, then like that's such a, I mean, it's a conditional way to live. But I think it's important to be able to set people up to be able to take these things out in the world and understand how they can be doing all of that and figuring it out and moving the energy and working with it. So, you know, I still feel like there's so much more that I want to do with that. You know, one of the things that I'm working on creating, and it's, I feel like still have so much room to go, but it'll get done when it gets done, is what I call the self-healing course. And it's like, it's this course of like 16 lessons that I created. God, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I used to kind of use them, and they were just very like basic, recording little videos and coming with lessons about different topics and things like that. But presenting it in a way where people can like, you know, do the like, the work, the homework assignments themselves, you know, like maybe one's about gratitude, or maybe one's about forgiveness, or maybe one's about healing or connecting or whatever intention, whatever it is that it might be. You know, so I'm really trying to find all the ways that I can focus on that. I mean, even with my retreat in Kauai that I do, you know, it's called the Kauai Healing Retreat, and it's all about healing. And this year, even more than last year, I want to incorporate even more of that self-healing aspect, which was very much there even last year when we did it. But this year, while we're there in November, I really want that to be so much more of a focus, because, you know, I grew up in a very codependent family, and I feel like there's the world that we live in is very codependent. And I feel like that is so diminishing of standing in our power. And I feel like it's so important for us to learn how to exist in self-reliance in those individuals.
Yeah.
And still maintain a balance of allowing support and receiving from others, but not from a place of dependency where we're not able to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
More from a place of, I know I'm worthy of receiving.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to give to me, I'm going to receive. Or if I need help, then I'll ask for it. But having more a sense of self-reliance, you know? Yeah. So for me, that's what a lot of that self-healing is about helping people heal codependency. Because it's just, I know in my own family with people like with suicide and drug addiction and things like that, that I've seen like some very intense costs and risk and impacts of codependency. And when it comes to like healer client or therapist client or different roles like that, or sometimes even just like doctor patient, those clients or those patients can create a lot of codependency on the people that are helping them, especially if it's someone who's helping them maybe like feel good or see a part of themselves. Sometimes they can really want to feel like, well, I can only get that if I go to you.
Yeah.
Or if I go to someone like you. And I want to teach people. Now I'm going to teach you how to get there yourself and how to connect with that in yourself and how to be able to figure that out in yourself.
Yeah.
So that you don't always need to always be going to someone for it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's freaking awesome, man.
Yeah, I just think that's important.
And I feel like a big part of that is when people do get to that point, then you kind of tend to attract people.
Yeah.
And friends and people into your life that are on a similar journey or similar path. And then you get like what someone might get from you, they might be able to get in like some close friends and along with themselves. But I think you're totally on the right track that it starts with themselves. And man, this might sound blasphemous, but I think you're like, I see what you're doing as a beautiful ministry.
Thank you.
Like, I think I've said that before, but it really is, because it's like you're going out making disciples, but I don't think that the whole idea is to, it's not to be worshipped. It's not to keep coming back to you.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want to give people what I have.
Yeah.
And I think it's so cool that you do that.
And I just want to remind you.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, that's one reason why like I focus on my work with is and all my clients and students are all other healers, because mm-hmm. I believe that's a way more efficient way of having a greater impact, you know, to create more ripples, to, you know, like really be helping the people who are the healers and to train them and to teach them and to help them get to that part of themselves, because then they can go out in the world and for all of that their community is going to be, then they can be helping all of them.
You know?
And so then that just gets to keep spreading out. It's funny, like when I was in school back in 2009, I was getting like a reading, you know, like a psychic reading with one of my teachers. And one of the things that she told me was that as a healer, that I wasn't here for the masses of the world, that I was here to heal the healers and teach the teachers. Mm. And in that moment, I felt and believed there was this deep unworthiness that I believed that I'm not worthy of that. Mm. I'm like, I'm just little old me. There's no way that I can do that. Mm. And I just literally like threw it out, put it in the back of my mind. And then it was probably maybe about 5 years after that. So it's been about 4 years at that point on my healing journey, like as a healer. And one day I had someone ask me, what's your like niche of clients? I was like, well, I guess I don't really know, because I have all different kind of clients. You know, and I was like, I have, it's men and women. It's all ages. It's all races. It's all like socioeconomic backgrounds. It's different locations. Like I really like don't know, like different cultural backgrounds. And so I started reflecting on that. And I realized the only commonality in all of my clients was that they were all healers. Some of them like newly stepping onto that path and trying to understand what that means and what that looks like, which I find is a lot of my clients. And then, but sometimes it's healers who have been on their journey for a long time. And maybe they're looking to take that to the next level or to transform that. And so since that time, which has been almost 5 years now, you know, since I really got that and saw that and chose to, I've now chosen to take that on and to believe that, you know, that like I am here to help the other healers and the teachers, and I'm just going to accept that and I'm going to focus on that. And it's been amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your demographic is human.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. That's so cool, man. Mm-hmm. I love it. And do you think that maybe that commonality could be from, it seems like a lot of the people that really seek to heal themselves ultimately get the ability to heal others. So it's like a lot of the people that come to you already have that desire.
Yeah.
And it's cool because you get to like feel that and help them figure that out. Yeah. Give them a language to speak, sort of.
And it's just like, here, let me help you like help you find your path. I'm not going to show it to you. I'm going to help you figure out how to find it. And then I'm going to like just kind of encourage you and be your mirror. Because a lot of times as a healer and as a teacher, I really just see myself as a mirror. All I'm here doing is mirroring back to y'all who you are.
Yeah.
You may not fully be feeling worthy of it yet, or you may be disconnected from it, but this is also existing within you.
Yeah.
You know, like this mirror that I'm providing, it exists in you somewhere. So look in it and then notice all the spaces where you don't believe you're worthy of it. And then that's what we're going to work on for a little while.
Yeah.
And then once we clean house and get all that out of the way, then we can look at, now how am I going to bring me out into the world?
Yeah.
And actually start living that path.
That's so awesome.
You know, sometimes we got to go into hell first, clean up all that heavy baggage so that we can have a little more of the lightness and just empowerment to move forward.
Yeah. Carl Jung said, if a tree's roots wish to, or if a tree wishes to grow to heaven, its roots must reach down to hell.
You know, at school, like the healing school I went to, the teachers, every one of them used to always say, in order to descend, we have, or I'm sorry, in order to ascend, we first have to descend.
Beautiful.
So here we go.
Yeah. So I guess what would you say to anyone who's interested in this type of stuff? What do you think is the first step?
I think the first step is just, I mean, there could be so many things, but the first thing is just do like research, talk to people, ask questions, like be a seeker, read books, right? Like just anything that you're interested in, just start to find all the resources that you can, whether that's conversations with people, classes you take, picking people's brain, reading books, listening to podcasts, like really mm-hmm. just start to absorb all the information that you can about those things, because then that can help us start to really make connections. But then we also have to be willing to look at ourselves too. You know, so to find some type of like practice of reflection or self-awareness to really get a sense of what's in the way. And if when we get there, we need to get support to help us see what that is, that's okay. So sometimes like you got to be willing to get that support too. And then from there, you can figure out what you want to do next. But research, absorb information, get support, face your shit, and then you can figure out how you want to move forward after that.
And I feel like the practice is maybe the second. Like figure out what it is you want or need to do and
what it's going to look like.
And then start doing it. So,
and most people find they've already been doing a version of it.
Or I've found for me that a lot of the things that I feel like I, once I realized the true aspects of things, that I already had a lot of the tools, because it's like, I've already been learning about this stuff, but now that I am able to bring it into the moment, then it's like, it starts to make a lot more sense, and then it becomes something you can actually apply. So I do agree, like learning about it, even if it doesn't make sense, is still really useful. And then once you learn how to make sense of it, that's where the practice comes in. And it's pretty awesome.
It's a good thing to do. It's important because the practice is like walking the talk. But first you got to figure out what the hell your talk is. Not like just talking somebody else's.
So if people are interested in coming to see you locally...
So I work out of Kansas City, you know, if you want to be in person, but I do things on the phone and on video and all that. But my website's one of the best places, which is belovehealings.com. And you can see all the things I do, like events, workshops, classes, all the different healing sessions that I do, which are like psychic readings, energy work, inner child therapy, past life regression therapy, processing work, and there's ways to contact me on there, read a little bit more about me. You can also follow me on Instagram at belovehealings. And then I'm on Facebook as Matt Turner. And my Facebook page is Dr. Matt Turner, belovehealing. So pretty much any of those ways, especially my website and Instagram. Those are probably like two of the best ways. And I'm on Facebook a decent amount too. But someday I'd love to not have to use Facebook anymore.
I think everyone's getting to that point.
I mean, I'm always happy to answer questions. And if you don't like know how to start or what that looks like, just send me a message. You can email me from my website, but it's belovehealings@gmail.com. And then maybe I can help you figure that out.
And I'll second that, because as someone who I feel like struggles with what to believe and like where to go with that type of stuff, I feel like you're just a great resource for anyone who's like struggling or suffering, really. Anyone who's like facing some problems, but doesn't necessarily have like a foundational belief system. So there are people that teach truth out there and that can really help with that, that don't care what you believe. And I think you're one of those people. Like, it doesn't matter if someone's...
It's all the same at the core. They're just different languages.
And I think you speak the language really well. So I appreciate you.
Speak the language of love, you can understand any language.
I agree. Thanks for doing another podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Heck yeah. That was like right out of an hour too.
Really?
Perfect.
Perfect. Shadows die.